This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Financial fraud takes many forms, costs billions of dollars a year, and affects about 9 million of us every year. These are complex yet increasingly common crimes involving identity theft and stealing personal information from your credit cards. Banks and credit card companies have begun to combat that by issuing those new cards where the information is stored on a chip rather than the magnetic strip that's been around for years. But clever thieves are finding their way around that added layer of protection, too. During this season of buying, increased awareness can be one step in protecting yourself. So we're going to talk about that and other ways you can take precautions against being a victim of these crimes with Andy Curley, a detective with the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department's Financial Crimes Division. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
Rick Rojas is a Huntersville Police Department detective specializing in financial crimes. Good morning to you.
Morning, Mike.
Rosetta Jones is Vice President in the Security and Risk Initiatives Group at Visa. I've already asked her to pay my bill, and she said no.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. And all three of us in our Spirit Square studio with us by phone is Kimberly DeRuda, a North Carolina Special Deputy Attorney General for Consumer Protection. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
First of all, just a general question. I'm not sure who should take this, but how prevalent are these crimes, are identity theft and theft of your personal financial information in North Carolina and in this region in particular? Let's start with you, Kimberly. How prevalent are these crimes?
They are prevalent, and they come in all different forms. So I actually pulled up some statistics that we keep. Now, this is going back to the beginning of our Identity Theft Protection Act, so that was in 2005, so it's going back about 10 years, and just from a standpoint of data breaches, and this is all kinds of data breaches, we have had 2,900 breaches reported to our office, and that affects 8.2 million people just in North Carolina over that 10-year period.
And when you say breaches, are these essentially break-ins into computer systems by hackers?
It is all kinds. We keep track of whether it's stolen laptops or other equipment. It could be the hackers. It could be just a simple release of information. Somebody didn't put something behind a firewall. It could be data theft by an employee. It could be things lost in transit. A lot of times a company will put things on a flash drive and send it to another location. And by the time it gets there, the flash drive is missing.
So is it more prevalent now than it was when we relied on the mails and trucks to move things around?
It definitely has increased.
Okay.
It definitely has increased in the last few years.
In Charlotte, in Huntersville, let's talk about locally, how prevalent is this and what are the most common types of identity theft, information theft, credit card information theft that you go after or see?
Well, Mike, one of the things that we've seen is a large increase of people whose cards have been compromised by some sort of skimmer device. We've seen an increase of that here in recent years. People will get that information encoded on counterfeit cards and then turn around and use those cards for, obviously fraudulent purchases.
We'll talk about skimmers and what they are in a second. What about up in Huntersville?
Identity theft is kind of a broad term. Credit card theft is one small version of credit card theft. We deal with a lot of it, people coming into our area using cloned credit cards. We get a lot of credit cards that are stolen out of, say, vehicles, say at like Little League games, where for 2 hours people are watching the game and that's a two-hour spending spree for the people that steal the card. We get a lot of that. But there's other versions of identity theft that we deal with a lot. We're coming into the beginning of the year. People are starting to think about taxes, so we deal a lot with like tax fraud, somebody using your identity to file taxes and get a return, that kind of thing. So
you just said cloned credit card. Mm-hmm. That means somebody has gotten the information off the back of your card, and they've gotten a card of their own.
What they'll do is they'll take your credit card, and they'll take the number and the information off of it, and they'll clone it onto another credit card. We've seen them use gift cards that they can encode the information on. You can go on eBay, and for about $80, you can buy what's called an encoder, where you can put the information off of one card and put it onto another.
What about the raised plastic numbers? They can't change those numbers.
They can't change them. But if you think about it, long gone are the days where you're actually handing your card to somebody.
They're making the
What's
card
happening is they're walking up to the store and they're just swiping it, and the person that's the clerk is not necessarily paying attention to whether it's a blue card or a green card. It could be a white blank card with no numbers on it, and it's not really paid attention to.
So let's start with credit cards. Let's get deep into credit cards here, because we're going to be using a lot of credit cards over the next month or so. We've been using these cards with the magnetic strip on the back for a very long time. I remember the first shopping plate that my – let's see, they used to call them in Washington, shopping plates. It had no magnetic strip. It was just a card with the raised numbers, and it was metal, and they did a carbon cut. But the magnetic strip contains all the information. What does that strip contain?
It contains your account number as well as a three-digit code that helps prevent counterfeit fraud. So I remember back in the day, before a magstripe, they used to have to verify card number in a printed book. Do you remember this? When you use the card, they have to check it in a book to see if it was lost or stolen. Then we introduced the magstripe, and all of those authorizations became electronic. Now we're entering a new era of security with chip cards. So chip actually stores the same information, but now produces a one-time code for every transaction.
Well, let's back up.
It's called a cryptogram.
Let's back up to these credit cards with the magnetic strip. So the strip contains the number on the front of the card and also the three-digit code on the back of the card?
So there is a secret number embedded in that mag stripe called a CVV. And with that secret number plus your 16 digits, they can create a counterfeit card,
Is that secret number different from the...
Yes, it is. The number on the back of your card is called a CVV2. You're often asked for that number when you're making purchases on the internet, for example.
But it doesn't contain my bank account number.
No, it does not.
Does it contain my name?
It does, yes.
It does contain my name.
Yes.
And the expiration date,
and
too,
the
of
expiration
the card.
Date. Correct. Everything the bank needs to know to verify the transaction about who you are in that account.
Why have these cards become increasingly vulnerable?
Gone are the days when a criminal could break into a storefront and steal cash. That account information is as valuable as cash today to criminals because they have the ability to clone these cards. And so now we need to up our game when it comes to security and make that data less valuable to criminals. And one way we're doing that is by adding dynamic information like this cryptogram to every transaction. And chip will do that.
So because the banks have been absorbing the cost of the credit card fraud and theft, they've been issuing these new cards. I've only gotten one. I have several bank accounts and several vendors that I have credit cards with. But I've only gotten one with the little chip in the front, the little gold chip in the front. What's on that chip? What kind of information is on that chip?
The same information.
As on the magnetic strip.
Correct.
But something additional.
Except it has the ability to produce this one-time code for every transaction. So now the chip communicates when you insert it into the terminal, because now you insert as opposed to swipe.
Right.
When you insert it into the terminal, that chip communicates with the terminal and creates a one-time use code. Only one time, one and done. And that is sent to your bank, and the bank verifies that it is, in fact, a legitimate chip card.
So if it's generating its own one-time code, how does that protect me? Why couldn't a fake card with a fake chip generate a one-time code?
Because that technology is nearly impossible to be replicated by criminals.
But this card that I'm holding in my hand, which has a chip in it, also has a magnetic stripe on the back of it.
Sure.
So it can be swiped. And I guess you're doing that because not every vendor has converted to the new chip readers, correct?
So for a period of time, a criminal could steal your card information and use it at a magstripe terminal. This is an evolution, not a revolution. This will take years. In other countries, it's taking them, a decade and a half to ultimately move to chip. But we think it is more secure technology and will enhance protections for both merchants and consumers.
Now, these cards or cards like them have been in use in Europe for a long time.
Yes.
Do they have the extent of credit card fraud that we have in this country as a result of having these chips for a long time?
The U.S. does tend to have higher fraud as a country because we have invested in other technologies besides chip, but they also have more acute challenges around card not present or internet fraud as a result. Either way, I think the important thing for consumers to know and those listening is that you're protected from fraud in any instance. Zero liability is a policy that Visa and many other card brands offer. So if fraud does happen, you're protected.
That's true on credit cards. Is it true on your debit card?
100%, yes.
Really?
On both credit and debit, you're protected 100%.
Is that new?
No.
Really?
No.
Okay. So if you don't have a chip card yet, you shouldn't be terribly frightened?
No.
But if you're a vendor, are you responsible? If you're a vendor and you have not taken it upon yourself to install these new devices that read these chip cards, are you held liable?
So a chip is a situation or an instance where we're actually putting our money where our mouth is. We are so confident in this technology. We are telling merchants, if you invest in chip technology, you will be protected from counterfeit fraud 100%. Invest in a chip terminal, and you'll be protected from this type of fraud.
So in your view, in Visa's view, these chips are completely safe.
Nothing is completely. Nothing is 100%, as my detective friends will assure us of that. However, it is a great leap forward when it comes to security. But that's not the only thing we're working on. I mean, there are other technologies that, Mike, we spoke about earlier on mobile phones, mm-hmm. that are going to leapfrog security even more when it comes to mobile payments.
We're going to talk about that because that's something that people have been slow to adopt unless they're Apple customers. But we'll talk about that in a second. You still have opportunities to hand these cards, whether they're magnetic stripe cards or chip cards, to people behind the counter, to waiters. You use the number on the telephone if you make a purchase over the phone. You use the number on the front of the card to type into a website if you're on a website trying to buy something because you don't have chip readers at home, although we should, shouldn't we? Is that going to help, really, this chip? Because we make so many online purchases. We hand these cards to so many waiters, they can just write the number down, can't they?
They could. What we're trying to solve for are the increase in fraud a result of data compromises. You've all read and seen about big retailer compromises. This is data loss at scale. And at scale, these criminals are selling account numbers in massive amounts in underground card reader sites. Mm-hmm. That's what we're trying to solve for, is that increase in point-of-sale counterfeit fraud that we're seeing as a result of the breaches. And we know that this technology, it's proven all around the world to directly address that type of fraud.
So if you lose the card, this chip isn't going to help you.
It could still be used, yes, if someone were to steal your wallet. But think about it. When's the last time you've had your wallet stolen? Mine was 11 years ago.
I don't even want to go there.
Okay, and when's the last time you've had your card reissued as a result of a breach? I've had mine reissued twice this year alone. So that's the prevalence of the fraud that's happening, and that's what this technology will directly address.
Well, let me ask you this. Since these credit cards, these new credit cards have this chip that generates a one-time number, each time you use it, it generates a unique number for the transaction. I don't really understand why that's important or how that works, but we don't have to get into the weeds of that. Why not also make it so that you have to enter a PIN number? So if somebody steals this card or steals the number on the card, you can't use it because you don't know the PIN.
That type of fraud is called lost and stolen. Again, when's the last time you've had your wallet stolen? That type of fraud is less than 10% of fraud in the U.S., and it's actually decreasing around 1% year over year. We support PIN. Visa actually owns two PIN networks, Plus for ATM and Interlink for point of sale. So we support PIN on chip technology. The question is, and what we had to think about when we looked at introducing chip, is the length of time it would take to adopt chip plus PIN. Mm-hmm. Two-thirds of merchants today have no capability to accept PIN. How would they have a restaurant? It's sort of awkward to think about bringing a PIN pad to a restaurant table today.
Well, you know,
if it's going to add time to a merchant and cost to a merchant, and it's a type of fraud that's shrinking, should we really focus on the future and look at things like tokenization?
They've actually been bringing the machines to the table in cafes in Paris for a long
around
time.
Around the world, for sure, yes.
They just bring the machine to the table and you insert your card. We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk more than just about credit card fraud. We'll talk about other kinds of financial and identity theft fraud in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Great Outdoor Provision Company, celebrating their week-long Chill Friday event with signature holiday gift wrapping. Details at greatoutdoorprovision.com. And Tyndall Subaru Gastonia test drives are available for the new 2016 Forester SUV with EyeSight technology. The Subaru Share the Love event in November. Details at TyndallSubaru.com. Well, the day after Thanksgiving is Black Friday, and among the things shoppers will be searching for are deals on technology and gadgets. So in advance, we have technical experts standing by to talk about the deals you might find, to shed some light on what you need to know about the latest in TV, computer, and smartphone technology, and more. And we'll do that tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the country's 911 emergency call system was designed for landline telephones. With the growing reliance on mobile technology, experts say it's out of date. Current gaps in the 911 system and how it can be improved.
That's the Diane Rehm Show, coming up next from 10 to noon on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about credit card fraud, identity theft, other forms of financial fraud with Andy Curley and Rick Rojas. They are both detectives, Andy with CMPD and Rick with Huntersville PD. Rosetta Jones is Vice President of Security and Risk, Vice President of the Security and Risk Initiatives Group at Visa. And Kimberly DeRuda is North Carolina Special Deputy Attorney General for Consumer Protection for the state of North Carolina. We're going to wrap up this conversation on credit cards and these new cards. These new cards, as you say, we don't swipe them anymore. We insert them into the device, and we leave them there until the transaction is over. Does that slow down the transaction? I guess what I'm getting at here is, are we going to have to allow for extra time this holiday season to use these new cards?
I will say there is a bit of a learning curve this holiday season as people move from swiping that they've done for multiple decades to now inserting the card, and it will take a few seconds for the terminal to approve it. I think what we've learned from other countries that have gone before us is that people tend to forget their cards and leave them in the terminal because they're so used to swiping and putting them back in. So remember to pull your card out of the terminal this holiday season.
Okay. Now, these are called EMV chips in these cards. I learned yesterday that EMV stands for Europay, MasterCard, Visa. Are these chips going to be in American Express cards, or are they opted out?
So EMV is really, not to get too technical on you, is really the technical standard that supports interoperability. So American Express, yes, will issue chip cards, as will all competing brands. It's an interoperable standard that supports this one-time code that we spoke about.
Okay. One of you, I think it was you, Detective Rojas, mentioned skimming.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard a lot in the past about skimming, and I'm not sure people understand it. I'm not sure that I understand it. How does it take place? That's where they're actually getting, the crooks are not in possession of your card. They're simply taking the information off of your magnetic strip as you swipe your card.
Yeah. What's happening is, one case I had in particular a couple of months ago is we found a skimmer in a gas pump in Huntersville. And what it simply is it's like a thumb drive that you would use for your computer, and it's got a ribbon hooked, a cable hooked up to it. And what they'll do is they'll hook in between the keypad that you punch in and the motherboard of the pump. It'd be similar to the keypad on an ATM or the motherboard of the ATM. And as you're putting in your information, swiping your card and putting your information, it's downloaded onto that thumb drive.
So that's inside the pump. They've gone inside.
Well, there's different variations. The one case I had in particular was inside the pump, so you would never see it. It was actually a maintenance man working on the pump that found it. But we've seen ones on ATMs, too, that are attached to the outside, and they would use a small PIN camera to capture you punching in your PIN number on the keypad. So there's different variations of skimmers.
Wow.
For police officers like Andy and I, it's a cat and mouse game to me. For everything you figure out to counteract it, they figure out a way to get around
So are these? I've only heard about these devices on gasoline pumps. Are they in other locations?
They certainly are. I've personally worked two cases in the last year and a half where we pulled them off of ATM machines. Actually, we were fortunate enough to catch the individuals in the act. The individuals involved were foreign nationals. And they were sent here for this explicit purpose of trying to garner the information on the back of people's credit and debit cards and their PIN numbers.
Is there any way to protect yourself from that? How would you know? you wouldn't know in most cases, would you?
Some of the machine, some of the devices that they put on the ATM machines are very, very good. You wouldn't know just by looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a habit when I go to the ATM machine, I like to look at the machine real close. I'll reach up and make sure that the plates and everything look like they should and they're not loose, that they won't easily pull off or something like that. But really, there is not a whole lot you can do.
You mentioned some of these things have cameras so that they can catch your PIN number being input using your fingers. That's if you're using a debit card. If you're using a credit card, you don't put a PIN number.
Well, you don't have to worry about it with the credit card then. Once you swipe it, yeah, that information's automatically downloaded onto the skimmer. So you wouldn't have to worry about it at that point.
How often does this happen? Is this prevalent or is this just rare?
As far as the skimming or the...
Yeah, the skimming.
I would say I've personally been involved in a lot more here in the last few years, and I think we've actually had discussions with some of the merchants that sell some of the devices that we were talking about earlier, and their philosophy is the reason we're seeing an increase is because Europe's gone to the chip and pin technology. So the bad guys are coming over here, and they're trying to skim. You know, this is the last bastion of where they can get this information very easily. And so that's why they're targeting here.
So will gas pumps have these chipped readers at some point in the future?
They will as well. I would say in terms of skimming, at a local level, you probably will see more. When you look nationally, criminals are going to go for scale. And so that's why the big retailer breaches are probably far more prevalent than skimming.
Around the state, Kimberly, are there pockets where this is happening more frequently than not?
You know, we don't. It's honestly, it's just across the state. I mean, we don't really see any particular area. It doesn't always get reported that way anyway. We just kind of get statewide numbers. A lot of it is the retail, the larger retails that are having, you know, issues with data breaches and stuff. So you would think most of those are located in, you know, larger areas, but...
Now, a lot of us do a lot of shopping and buying online. And when we do that, we are on the computer and we're putting in our credit card information, our name, our address, our email, all of the personally identifiable information except our Social Security numbers pretty much. How secure is that? I mean, we don't know where that information is going. It's flying through the internet over wires. How do you know it's a secure connection? How do you know it's an encrypted connection? How do you know only the business at the other end of the transaction is able to see all that information? How do we know that?
Well, we find that by far shopping over the internet is one of the safest ways to shop. The larger companies, Visa and the other organizations, have procedures in place to protect you online. If you're shopping, make sure that I always tell people when they're shopping, make sure you type in the address that you're looking to go to. Don't click on a link that you get from an email or something like that, because then we get into things like phishing and farming with computer cyber crimes. And I don't want to go into detail about that here, but make sure that you just type it in. Don't just click on a link.
Because if you get a link, they can mock up a website that looks precisely like the actual website, and you're giving all these crooks your personal information and getting nothing in return.
Yeah, there's two different versions of it. One is called phishing, and basically what that is they send you an email that looks like it's from, say, Bank of America or a larger company, and they're asking you to verify your personal information. You click on the link, but it actually does not take you to the major company. It takes you to somewhere else.
So to be clear, Bank of America, Banana Republic, whoever it is that sent you this email will never ask you in an email to verify your personal information. Is that correct?
I can't speak for every company everywhere and exhaustively their policies, but in a gross general sense, yes. Banks will not need to verify your personal information. They already know that.
Mike, is a good
via email
rule,
in particular.
As a good rule of thumb, it would be very unusual for that to happen. And if I were to get an email or something like that before I would ever think about responding to that, I would contact the bank myself directly.
Or the vendor.
One of the simple things you can look for, there's a couple simple things you can look for. One of the simple things to look for is are they calling you by name? These companies that you do business with, whether it's a bank or whatever, for example, PayPal, PayPal will only send you an email with your first and last name. If it does not have your first and last name on it, it's not from PayPal. So that's kind of a telltale sign. If it says, like, dear valued customer or something like that, I would totally question that.
So, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's important to take caution as a consumer when you're shopping and looking for these signs. What you want to be worried about is whether or not a criminal has your information and is using it fraudulently. And one of the most important things you can do as a consumer is sign up for alerts. These are text messages that your financial institutions are offering you, in most cases, for free now. If and when a card is used in a certain capacity, either a certain dollar amount or used internationally, you will receive a text message on your smartphone that says, hey, your card's being used. That makes you more aware, more alert. And we know from research that tends to stop fraud much earlier in the process.
Now, we've been talking about personal use of these cards and our account information. Kimberly, are we more at risk from that and being skimmed at gas pumps and people stealing our card numbers? Or are we more at risk from these data breaches that we've heard so much about at the consumer level, at the big box stores? And there was a rash of big stores in the last year who have
been
compromised. Should we worry more about that?
I think what's been mentioned before, it's all about scale. When the data breaches is resulting in tens of thousands or even millions of people's information at one time versus the more localized skimming devices that's getting one person at a time. And not that that isn't harmful to those people, but just from the numbers perspective, somebody getting into a retailer's computer system is going to result in much more widespread fraud. I mean, one of the things we recommend, obviously, is know which retailers you're going to, know what websites you're going to, who you're giving your information to. Look for secure sites, like something with the HTTPS, so it's a secure site. And as has been mentioned before, you know, type in the address of the places you're going, especially your credit card companies and your bank. But
I'm sure that places like Target that you can buy online at, and Neiman Marcus, which I'm certain you can buy online at, places like Michaels, I don't know whether you can buy online there or not, but they've all been breached. UPS has been breached. Dairy Queen, even Goodwill has been breached. Home Depot has been breached. If you go to their websites, I'm sure they all have HTTPS in the prefix of the web address, which makes the website secure. But it's the back end that is not always secure. It's hackers
Absolutely.
Getting it. So are we at more danger, or are we as consumers completely protected from that, except for the fact that they now have all of our information?
Well, I mean, from the standpoint, there's zero liability, so you shouldn't be out monetarily if they did get your information. It's one of those, you know, you need to check your credit card statements. You need to be vigilant to catch the things early. So if you immediately see some charge that happened yesterday because you're checking regularly, you're going to be able to stop it much quicker than if you're only checking monthly statements, or because most people can check their online banking and things like that. So you're going to be able to catch it much sooner if you're sort of being vigilant and on top of it. But, I mean, from a standpoint of shopping and online shopping, your information is everywhere. I mean, the states have your information on computer systems. The federal government has your information on computer system. I mean, everybody's information is digital in some form, somewhere. So, yes, criminals are going to look for large retailers they can breach, and hopefully the retailers are taking steps that they need to take to keep their computer system safe.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because I don't feel safe. Now that you've told me that
I think we've terrified everybody.
That's right, yeah. That my personal information is everywhere. It's on every computer system of every company I've ever done business with. You have it at the state of North Carolina because I pay taxes frequently, by the way. I just want to let you know that I pay taxes frequently.
Oh, good.
And the federal government certainly has that information, and a lot of people file their taxes electronically now, which means it's just flying through the air to get to you guys. How much work does it take to get this information out of these machines? Because it seems to be happening on a regular basis, and that's putting all of us at risk, isn't it? Because that takes us into identity theft, not just money theft. They're stealing who I am, and suddenly I can't prove who I am.
Well, let me add a little context to the problem, if I may. This crime is real. And I know when it happens, it's happened to me, it feels like you've been violated in some way. But if you look at the statistics, only 6 cents out of every $100 that's transacted in this country results in fraud. That's a very low level of fraud that's actually occurring as a result of this data loss. So there are systems in place that are monitoring behind the scenes for unusual transactions and stopping the fraud. So you might see headlines about millions of accounts being lost, but then you have to think about how much of that is actually being used for fraud. And based on our numbers, it's very little. And you add that to zero liability policies, a consumer should feel very, very safe using their cards.
They may feel safe about having – well, I'm not even just talking about cards now. I'm talking about having your personal information on these computer systems around the world. They may feel safe about their being covered financially. But if somebody says they're me because they breached the IRS computer system – and there have been instances of this where people have gone to file their taxes expecting a refund, and the IRS says, we've already given you that check because somebody else has filed as you and gotten your refund, and you're out of luck because they're not going to pay it twice. How concerned should we be, Kimberly, about that kind of theft, people stealing our identities?
I mean, it definitely is a concern, and there are steps people can take. Again, monitoring your credit report. So you can see if your Social Security number is being used to open new credit. You can get your Social Security statement so you can see if your wage report looks accurate. Obviously, when you file your taxes, that's going to, you know, show up if there's some kind of tax fraud. So there definitely are ways people can be vigilant and monitor their own situation, and hopefully they don't find anything, that, you know, everything's fine. But if they do find something, then they can start taking the steps they need to take, depending on what it is.
Well, for instance, I know that if your identity is stolen through if the IRS thinks somebody else is you, the burden of proof is on you to let them know that you are you. And I'm not sure how you do that if somebody else has stolen all the information that they need to file a tax return and get a refund, but suddenly you have to prove, that's not me, I'm me. Is the same true in North Carolina? If somebody steals our identity and files and gets a North Carolina return, do I have to prove to you that I'm me?
Well, I don't work with the North Carolina Department of Revenue, so I'm really not sure what their process would be, from that standpoint. But presumably, you're going to have identifying documentation that you are who you have said you are, and so then you can produce that to whomever might need it.
You know, Social Security, if I'm right, I think I'm right about this. The Social Security Act of 1934 specifically says that Social Security numbers are not supposed to be used for the purpose of identifying an individual except with the Social Security system. How have we gotten to the point where everybody wants our Social Security number? You rent an apartment, they want your Social Security number. What's up with that? And if you refuse to give it to them, they won't do the transaction.
Right, and those are for credit checks. I mean, people, legitimately businesses do need some information so they can check your creditworthiness if it's a situation that someone is extending credit to you, and those are acceptable uses or have become acceptable uses of Social Security numbers.
But then how do you protect your Social Security? My doctor has my Social Security number, and I've seen it sitting on the countertop on a form that I filled out when I went to visit, and it was sitting there when I came out of the doctor's office. So anybody could have walked by and written down my Social Security number. Why are we doing business like that?
Well, the doctor might need to check their process for that. I mean, you're definitely right that whoever's getting it now needs to protect it, and they don't need to be exposing it to other patients or even employees that don't have a reason to have it. If that's something they're collecting for billing purposes, then the billing people might need it. But does the person processing the appointments, does that person need it? Probably not.
Andy Curley from CMPD has something to say about this, and we'll get to that when we come back from the break. We have to take one right now, as a matter of fact. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and from Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, where students can earn their executive MBA alongside other business leaders from around the world at the school's Miami campus. Details at kellogg.northwestern.edu/EMBA. Well, the country's 911 emergency call system was designed for a world of landline telephones. But with the growing reliance we all seem to have on mobile technology, experts say it's out of date. Current gaps in the 911 system and how it can be improved, the topic of the conversation coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation about consumer financial fraud, about credit card fraud, and more, now's the time. You can search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter, or email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. We're coming right back.
David Porter of Hendrick Acura, a WFAE underwriter.
Businesses more and more have to keep engaged with your clients and figure out a way to keep them coming back. WFAE seems to have that figured out. We have seen that WFAE has almost a lifetime loyalty among the listeners. We hear that on a regular basis.
For more information, email underwriting@wfae.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Kimberly DeRuda is with us. She's the North Carolina Special Deputy Attorney General for Consumer Protection for the state. Rosetta Jones is here. She's Vice President of Security and Risk of the Security and Risk Initiative Group at Visa. Rick Rojas is a detective in the Financial Crimes Unit in the Huntersville PD, and Andy Curley is the same at CMPD. And you wanted to talk about, I think, Social Security protection.
Yeah, I think one of the things we have to keep in mind is unfortunately, reality is we are at the mercy of businesses and government entities and other entities where, you know, our information is being housed. There's only so much that we as individuals can do with that, because if we want to do business with them, we're going to have to provide them that Social Security number. But there are positive things that we can do kind of going on the offense from a victim standpoint. We can contact the financial institutions that we engage business with and discuss maybe setting up some sort of password protection on our accounts, so that if someone tried to call in and impersonate us and try to move funds from one point to another or whatever, make unauthorized changes without the password, supposedly it would be more difficult for, you know, those changes to take place. Same thing with regards to your credit. You can get what's called a credit freeze, which basically blanks out your credit so no one can see it unless you decide that you want to preemptively lift that freeze so that you can obtain credit for yourself. That's a positive thing that you can do kind of as a protection against the issues we're talking about.
If I can interrupt, as of January, parents and anybody who has a guardianship over someone else are going to be able to do that for minors as of January 1.
Okay.
Aside
from Social Security numbers and our bank account numbers and our credit card numbers and our driver's license number, are there other numbers that we need to be aware of and protect?
I would say anything from your Blockbuster card credit number, card number, to anything that you have, any card that you have that can expose your identity can be vulnerable.
I hate to break it to you, but I don't think anybody has a Blockbuster number anymore.
Probably don't. I'm probably dating myself. But say a Harris Teeter card, a discount card, they take the same information that you're talking about, that you're concerned about. And if you have that card or you have that number, there's that human factor. You can talk to somebody there, and they might be able to expose your information. Once you have that information, then you can apply for things like credit cards and tax returns and things like that. So any number that you have, no matter how frivolous you think it is, can be vulnerable to your identity.
I want to bring in some questions from people who have been listening to us as we've been talking. And the first one is from Anne, and she wants to know some information about something I've been really curious about. Anne emails, "We now have apps like Apple Pay on our smartphones that can be used in place of physical credit cards. How safe are these apps? Apple has one. Android has something called Android Pay. Google has one called Google Pay. There are probably others. How safe are these services, Rosetta?"
I love mobile payments, and I love them because they add additional layers of security to the consumer. I was telling you earlier, Mike, for every wall that we build to protect this valuable data, criminals build higher and higher ladders to get over it. We have to change the dynamic of the game and make the data that's in these computer systems useless to criminals, and mobile technology does that. Through Apple Pay and Samsung Pay and Android Pay, we've now introduced a new technology called tokenization. It basically means that once you input your account number into this payment wallet, that the technology will replace it with a substitute number so that what's flying through the air in the computer systems isn't your real account number. It facilitates your payment. It's identified with that payment, but it can't be reused if it's stolen. Mm. And that's going to change the nature of this.
What if your phone is stolen?
Then the other layer of security that mobile payments has are biometrics, thumbprint. We're looking at retinal scans and even pictures of identity-based authentication. They're going to enhance security into the future. So all in all, I think mobile technology adds more layers of security.
Into the future. But today, if you are using Apple Pay or you're using Android Pay or Samsung Pay on your phone and somebody steals your phone and your phone isn't password protected, are you still protected? Can they just click on the app and buy stuff?
Again, it's more protection than a card, right? You pick up a card on the street and you can go use it. With mobile, you're going to have probably device lock. You're right. Going to have some sort of biometrics, typically your thumbprint or fingerprint associated with the device. And in some cases, the app may also have password
protected. Only if it's a brand new device. So if you have – I'm just trying to get to the bottom of this. If you have Apple Pay or one of the phone pay services and you use it, and it's on your phone and you've given it all the information it needs to know to make a purchase, you should then password protect the phone itself so that you can't just swipe it to turn it on, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Because people like me, for instance, don't do that.
Well, I believe in terms of – and the only one I know is Apple Pay. I think the only way for it to work is for biometric through your thumbprint.
Correct.
Older phones, for example, you would not be able to do Apple Pay. It'd have to be biometric, one of the newer phones.
And how many retailers are set up to accept those kind of payments? Not many at the moment?
I know of maybe four or five in the Huntersville area that use Apple Pay, not very many.
I couldn't give you a number on that one.
How many phones are stolen? You get reports on?
Oh, we get tons of phones that are stolen. But the good thing today is, and a lot of people need to remember, your phone may be stolen.
You can turn it off.
You can turn it off.
Yeah.
You can have the password protection on your phone. And I know it's a nuisance, but we've got to understand something, that with the issue we're dealing with modern conveniences comes more risk.
Right.
And we have to understand that sometimes if we trade risk for convenience, we're going to have problems.
Chris emails, why are merchants hesitant to adopt Apple Pay? My understanding is that it's much more secure than the chip card, and you just said it was. So why are they hesitant? Is it just another layer of equipment they have to buy?
Well, I think if you're a merchant and no one's really walking in and asking to use their mobile phone, they're wondering, why do I need to invest in higher technology?
Right.
I think now that chip technology is taking on and terminals, merchants are looking at investing in new terminals. If you're a small or medium-sized business in the Charlotte area today, absolutely look at what we call a dual interface terminal. These are terminals that accept both mobile payments as well as physical chip card payments. That would absolutely be an investment worth it, because it sort of future-proofs your checkout line for these technologies.
Peter on Twitter, I don't want to remember a different PIN number for every credit card I own, and I don't want to use the same PIN for every card.
So, smart, Peter, smart.
Yeah, but so what do you do about that? You just have to remember all your PINs,
well,
right?
That's why we've made sort of PIN an optional add-on. The bank can decide whether to issue a PIN. A merchant can decide to issue it. The core technology around chip is what's going to be most effective at counteracting counterfeit fraud.
I think the term chip and PIN is kind of being confused sometimes. People hear PIN and they think that's the PIN number that they normally use, the four-digit number.
Right.
With chip and PIN technology, that's not the case. The PIN number is automatically built into the card.
The card makes
You're not going to know it. You're not going to have to remember it. It's
just,
nothing
just,
like that. There's two separate ones.
True. Point of clarification. So PIN is still a four-digit number that you memorize that gets input into the PIN pad. What I was talking about earlier, the secret code, is a cryptogram that's automatically generated when you use your chip card. So you can use a chip card without a PIN today.
Okay. Yeah, but I think what happened is
PIN is an additional
layer
of security
being used
that
is
may
chip
or may
and
not
PIN,
be
and people hear PIN and they think it's a number they have to remember.
Correct.
And that's not necessarily the
correct.
Case.
Correct.
Okay. An email comment. Why don't credit card companies and banks with check cards include a picture of the cardholder on the card? It's been so in Europe for years. I know it doesn't protect from ATMs and self-service, but certainly when you're using the card in the store, Costco does that. They put your picture on the back of the credit card.
Mike, I can speak to that. I've seen cloned counterfeited cards. There's no way just looking at the card that you would know. If I've got a device that can create the counterfeit card, I can certainly put my picture on it.
On the back of the card.
Think about all the times that you use your card to where you're not handing it physically to a clerk or a person. You're just swiping it in the machine. It's not really the picture. There are times where it would help, but from the majority of times it might not
should
help.
You sign the back of the card, or should you say on the back of the card, as I do, ask for ID?
Can I talk about that?
Please, go ahead. I
have Check for ID. It's an experiment I started when I started doing
they
financial
never do,
crimes.
By the way,
they
yeah.
never check. It's again, it's that human factor. When you get into the street level that Andy and I deal with in terms of credit card fraud and credit card theft, there's always that human factor. They go into stores to use somebody's illegal credit card or somebody's stolen credit card. They're looking for a particular profile. They're going at a certain time of the day. They're looking for somebody who is kind of not really paying attention. These are things that they're trained to do, and that's why it can be foiled. I have Check ID on my card, and nobody ever checks it.
I'll tell you who checks it for me, and it's happened twice now. For $1.47 purchase at Burger King.
Wow.
They asked for my ID. Let's see here. Frank on Facebook, do hotel room key cards store personal credit card information? I was told never to leave my door card when I check out.
I don't believe that they do.
I think that's an urban myth. We've investigated that. I obviously do not work for a hotel or the hotel industry, but based on our investigation, they do not encode your credit card information on that stripe, MaxStripe.
And Robert emails, how can I check if my child's identity has been stolen? Can I get a credit report on my child?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can do that. You can, and what she was just, I think Kimberly was talking about earlier, effective January 1st, you can get that credit freeze. That's something that you really should look at doing. Children are pretty good targets for identity theft because a lot of people aren't paying attention to their credit until they become of age when they're going to off to college and applying for student loans and that sort of thing. That's when they find out that their information has already been used.
Kimberly, some say that we should all, and I think you brought this up, checking our credit reports. Some say we should do this quarterly, and you can do it quarterly free, and you can do it by going from one credit monitoring bureau to another. So you go to Equifax one time, and whoever else does it the next time.
Experian, Transmart.
Right. Yeah, you basically every 4 months. So you would use each of the credit bureaus. So if you go to annualcreditreport.com, you can request your credit report. So, yes, 1 month you use TransUnion. 4 months later, use Equifax. 4 months after that, Experian, and then you're back around.
Now, what does that tell you when you ask for them to send you your credit report? What does that tell you?
It lists all your credit cards, your mortgage on your house, anywhere that you have credit has been extended. So you can look on there and see if all the credit cards that are on there belong to you. If you see a credit card that is something that you haven't applied for, then you can start investigating that and work to get that cleaned up. But it will let you know sort of what is going on, what is listed on your credit
report.
Well,
if you see something that's erroneous, so whether it's just the fact that you closed a certain account with a department store 5 years ago and it's still on your credit report, or whether it's something that you've never known about but there it is, who do you turn to?
One of the first things I always tell people to do is contact the business themselves. The reality is there are errors on people's credit reports. Sometimes it might be from that. It might be a loan that was you might have taken out previously and the loan itself was sold to another company, or it could have been opened fraudulently in your name information. If that's the case, that's where you need to start the dispute process with that business and then file a police report for identity theft.
So once that's happened and it's been corrected at the retail level or whatever you're dealing with, do they then report to the various credit bureaus that was erroneous and they take it off your report? Is that how it works?
Yeah, businesses now, it's not like it was 7 or 8 years ago. For the most part, they've become where they're more streamlined with how they handle that process. They'll require documentation from you, may request that you fill out an affidavit saying that you didn't open the loan or the account or whatever, and they've got an investigative process that they go through to try to make a determination of whether they think you opened the account or
does
not.
Does checking your credit report hurt your credit?
I think that's an urban myth, too. I think at one point it did, and I think because of the way things are now, I don't believe that it does anymore. I think it's important that people check their credit report. On our level of what we deal with fraud, we see it a lot. People check their credit report and they find something from years ago. Somebody's going to buy their dream home. They apply for a mortgage and they don't qualify because 5 years ago somebody opened up a credit card and ran up $15,000 on the card. Now they lose out on the house. Right. So I think it's very important that you check your credit report.
I personally subscribe to credit monitoring. This is a service. I don't have to check my report. I know you're granted one free.
Like Credit Karma, that kind of thing?
Yeah. I subscribe to it. I pay a small monthly fee. And anytime there's an inquiry, someone pings my credit report, or there's something negative posted to it, I get notified about it. Or someone opens up a new account, I get notified about it.
There are other services that protect you against identity theft. I don't want to necessarily mention who they are, but you can pay a monthly fee or a yearly fee, and they will keep track of who you are. And are those services on the up and up? Are they valuable? Do they work? Do they protect you?
I'm not familiar with any individual services.
LifeLock.
I will speak from my personal example or my personal experience is that I feel very confident knowing that if anything happens to my credit report, pinged, anything added or anything changed, I'm notified about it. And that's me having direct control and influence over what's happening with that report.
I know several people who have been the victims of identity theft, and it's a nightmare.
It
takes a tremendous amount of work on their part to get their stuff back together again. What should you do if you who do you turn to if you're a victim? Where do you go?
Well, you want to start with obviously reporting it to the police because we want to investigate it and hopefully find out where the origin is. But then it becomes a matter of just tracking down each of these creditors and basically clearing yourself so that this is not held against you. You know, you want to get it erased from your credit report because it has not involved you in the first place. So
there's also a website called identitytheft.gov, which I think is a federal government thing.
FTC.
FTC?
Yeah.
Yep. Did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I just wanted to – one of the things I wanted to add to what Rick was talking about, if you are a victim of an identity theft, you can get a fraud alert placed on your credit. The credit bureaus were quick to put an initial fraud alert on your credit for a period of 90 days. I've always found that to be extremely insufficient. If you're the victim of an identity theft, go for broke, get the 7-year fraud alert. You can get that. And basically, that just flags your credit, says, look, I've been the victim of identity theft. Please contact me before you authorize any credit be opening my name.
So be vigilant. Protect your cards. Don't let people watch you put your PIN number in. Don't lose your cards. Get your credit report every couple of months. Make sure you're on the up and up with
everything. Get alerts from your bank.
All right. And just be wise about all of this. And don't click on links and emails asking you for your personal information because no company will do that to you.
Stay on top of your finances.
Rosetta Jones, Vice President of Security and Risk Initiatives Group at Visa, Rick Rojas and Andy Curley, detectives at the Huntersville PD and CMPD, and Kimberly DeRuja from the state.